rebel, rebel, party, party, sex, sex, sex. And don't forget the violence, blah, blah, blah. Got your lovey-dovey set and lonely, speak your stupid slogan and everybody sing along. Babble, babble, bitch, bitch, rebel, rebel, party, party, sex, sex, sex. And don't forget the violence, blah, blah, blah. Got your lovey-dovey set and lonely, speak your stupid slogan and everybody sing along. Are you motherfuckers ready?
Welcome to Quest Communications. If you are calling about a promotion for the phone you called in on, press 1. For priority handling, or if you are calling about a different number, press 2. Thank you. Your call is being transferred.
Thanks for calling Quest. This is Jason. My ID number is 9590. How can I provide you with excellent service?
Hi, Jason. I'm wondering about Quest's new long distance in my area. Could you tell me a little about it, please?
Yeah. What was your telephone number, please?
It's...
Okay, excellent. First question to get a better idea is, what do you spend a month in long distance right now?
Probably about $90 to $100.
Okay. And what was your name, sir?
My name is...
Can I just have you verify your billing address for me real quick, okay? With the features and the way your line is set up right now, we could get you unlimited long distance, flat rate of $30 per month.
Unlimited long... Really?
Unlimited long distance in-state and out-of-state.
The continental U.S.?
Pardon me?
The continental U.S.?
Continental U.S. Or Alaska and Hawaii, too.
Oh, no kidding. That is a great deal. I tell you what, and you would handle switching me over from AT&T to Quest?
Yep, I could take care of all that for you right now. You wouldn't even have to make another phone call.
And is what kind of, you know, are there any limitations? Is there any catch, basically, is what I want to ask?
No catch. Unlimited long distance.
And it will never end, as far as you know?
It will never end.
No kidding. All right, sign me up.
As long as we sign up right here, you're going to have the same rate for as long as you have service with Quest.
Okay, let's do it.
Excellent. And what I'll need to do is get you over to what we call a third-party verification.
Okay.
And they're going to verify that we are switching you from AT&T.
Okay.
How's your day going so far?
It's going well.
Excellent.
Much better now, in fact.
Awesome. Okay.
And I have a question. Do you have A&I? I mean, does my phone number show up when I call?
Your phone number did not pop up, no.
It did not?
No.
Interesting.
There's no call information to display exactly what I see.
But does it usually show up?
Sometimes it does. Okay.
Where are you located, by the way?
I am actually up in Seattle.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
What's the weather like? Is it raining?
It's been on and off. It's pretty actually cloudy outside.
Uh-huh. I'm actually planning to go to Vancouver shortly. Is it very similar weather to Seattle?
Vancouver, Washington, or Canada?
Canada.
Canada. They are, it is very similar. If anything, it's a little bit warmer up there.
Really?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Yeah, they get a little bit warmer up there. When are you going up there?
Next month.
Okay, what are you going up there for?
Fun.
Just for fun? Have you ever been up there before?
Never been to Canada.
Oh, okay. It's actually not too bad. Where are you going up there? Just hang out, see the sights? Or?
Yeah, I've heard Vancouver's beautiful. Exactly. Check out the sights, check out some scenery.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Vancouver's a pretty nice little city up there. I've been up there a few times. Okay. Your long distance is actually going to be switched over on the 30th, which is next Friday. It takes us 3 business days, and then 2 business days on top of that to just, do the third-party verification, get everything pushed through.
Okay.
As of the 30th, you will have unlimited long distance with us. Flat rate, $30 a month. Do you have any other questions for me?
No, that's it.
I'm going to put you on hold for one quick moment here, and I will be right back with somebody from the third-party verification.
Okay.
One moment, please.
Take the music.
Thanks for hanging out. I got a representative from the third-party verification on the phone with us who's going to take it from here.
Okay.
Thanks for having a great evening.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Hello, this is Eric with Advanced Datacom. We're an independent verifications company, and our call is being recorded as per FCC rules.
Great.
Okay, please state your primary billing telephone number, area code first. Get the billing name on the account. State your name, sir.
That is my name.
Say it one more time for recording purposes. Are you at least 18 years old and an authorized person who has permission to make telephone service decisions?
Yes.
You're changing your long-distance service provider to Quest, correct?
Yes.
State your current provider?
AT&T.
AT&T?
Yep.
Are you giving your permission to change your long-distance provider to Quest Long Distance?
Yes.
You're giving your permission to change your local long-distance provider to Quest Long Distance, correct?
Yes.
Select a Quest Unlimited plan at $30 per month for the first 12 months with unlimited residential state-to-state, in-state, and if selected, local toll voice calls within the United States, correct?
Whoa, for the first 12 months?
That's what it tells me.
No kidding, they said it would never end.
It might not, I'm not sure.
Ooh. Yeah, okay, yes, we'll check it out. So yeah, that's fine.
This change to Quest service will apply only to the numbers that were provided. For identification purposes, may I have your date of birth, just the month and day, please? Great, thank you for choosing Quest Communications. If you have any questions about your service, please call 800-244-1111.
Great, thank you very much.
Good day, sir.
You too.
Security alert, all decks.
After very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your system sucks.
Hey, I don't believe that any system is totally secure.
Remember, hacking is more than just a crime.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
The number you have reached, 911, has been changed to a non-published number.
That I need to know, and I need to know now.
You are listening to Radio Free America.
Hey, I don't know why you're trying to call this person. He is such a loser that he downloaded this message from the internet to his computer and transferred it to his answering machine. Why don't you try calling the Radio Shack? He's probably hanging out there with all your other loser friends, fat ass.
Okay, welcome to Radio Freak America. Another great week. Got some housekeeping to do. Actually, Stank wants to give some shouts and pimp a show. Go ahead, Stank.
Well, show, we pimped on the show a few times, but I had a pretty good week this week. I started off as a guest host, special guest, whatever you want to call it, on Gamer Radio. Good friend of ours putting out a show every week that I think people would like. I wish a lot of people, more people would listen to, so head on over to Gamer Radio and check it out. I was on this past episode talking about some old school gaming, some old stuff that I think a lot of people might remember, a lot of people might get. And we basically talked about pretty much the evolution of games and how they have evolved to today, and what has changed and what hasn't changed, and some stuff like that. So I started off my week pretty good. Everybody should go check that out at hwhq.com.
Yeah, that was a great show. I love it. Bland, how you doing?
Doing great.
You ever hear Gamer?
Listen to one.
Isn't that an awesome show?
It was pretty damn funny.
damn funny show. Yes, they are. They're quite amusing. Stank, actually, to continue the housekeeping, has a little bitching to do. Bitch away. I haven't heard this, by the way.
Well, that's not that much of a bitching. Just
for
annoyance. I spend a lot of time in bookstores, and probably regular listeners have figured that out. I subscribe to a jillion magazines, and I read a lot of books, and I have Borders and Barnes & Nobles and Books & Million all within pretty close radius of my house. So I went to all three of them today searching. I was looking for a particular book or a particular topic. I don't even know, honestly, if a book exists. I would have to assume it does. I'm working on some Oracle programming, some C programming, accessing Oracle databases, to be specific. I shouldn't say Oracle programming. But I'm looking for accessing Oracle databases using C, particularly Pro-C, under Solaris, Unix. So I found several C books, and that's all fine and dandy, but I couldn't find in these three gigantic book chains, books a million, for God's sake. That should mean they have a million books, right? They should have what you need in just in the title of the store. And long story short, I did not find the book that I wanted to find, so I'm going to have to do some searching on the web, I think, to find what I want. My annoyance that really bothered me was all the shelf space in the computer sections of these stores were taken up with learn, variable, insert variable one here, in, insert time frame here.
Yes.
After books, after books. I kid you not, right in a row, three books back to back, Learn Linux in 21 days, Learn Linux in 7 days, and Learn Linux in 24 hours. Now, how in the hell can, it's like they're always trying to outdo each other with just the simple titles. It would be, they had Learn C in 21 days, they had Learn XXX, whatever you wanted to learn, they had a book to learn it in 21 damn days.
That's right. I want to come out of the book, Learn Linux Yesterday.
Yeah, learn Linux in one half of 1 millimeter of 1 second.
That's right.
And it said learn it in 24 hours. And there were several besides Linux. I just picked one at random. Pretty much any topic you can insert there. Variable one name, just put it in there. But I picked up the Linux, the Learn Linux, and inside the front cover was a disclaimer that says, warning, this book is not intended to be complete in 24 hours. What the hell is that about?
Yeah, very, thanks for telling us that.
Yeah, that, you know, there was just an amazing amount of these learn whatever in whatever time frame. And the other thing that took up a lot of shelf space was making your server hack-proof, hacking exposed, how to stop hackers, hacker's toolkit, hacker blah, 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 blah. There's a huge market for fear in books. We've said that how many times before the media uses fear to sell things and to scare people on mass media like television and radio, but it kind of struck me funny to see, and not funny ha-ha, funny like what the fuck, that they have all these books about how to stop the evil hackers and how to prevent people from hacking your system, and there was a whole one section of shelf space taken up by quote-unquote anti-hacking books. There were three sections taken up by learn whatever in X number of time books. And there was not one single book on Pro-C programming under Solaris. As a matter of fact, there wasn't a single book on Solaris at
really?
All.
Now, that surprises me. I've seen Solaris books in these large chains before, but yeah, you're so right. You know, hack attacks. You know, hack attacks revealed. And it's just, it is. They're, you know, think about it. You're a newbie sysadmin. You go in and, ooh, man, I don't want to be hacked. I want to make sure my, you know, Windows 2003 server is, you know, secure. So you buy all these books. Yeah, it's horrible.
And honestly, the prices on those books were $50 and $60.
Ooh, I know they're, it's extraordinary how expensive they are.
Like something, some brilliant book, this gigantic book like the Linux Bible or something like that, which are great. Any of the Bible books are phenomenal. We're like $30, $40 at the most. You know, you could find a lot of these great books for like $25, $30. Those things were like $50 and $60 each for those anti-hacking books. They sell. People want it because they're scared of us, I guess.
Costs a lot to put hacking in the title.
That's pretty much all they have to do.
All right, I'm going to end the housekeeping with an email. An email from Kiroshi. He writes, I've never really been more than someone with an interest. I've never been a hacker, a freak, or a social engineer. I've always just read about these people and listened to you guys. Sure, I'm virtually adept. Sure, I'm a geek. But I've never explored the system. There is a system, be it computers, although the internet is not a separate entity from the old phones, and that still runs on telco copper. But even the phones aren't their own living, breathing creature. Yet. What I'm saying is that computers and phones are all based on something bigger. That is human communication. The interaction of one person being able to share his thoughts with another being without an auxiliary medium. Computers and phones just expand on this idea that has been around for centuries. RFA 63 has inspired me to get on the phone and talk. To get on ham radio and talk. To get online and talk. But not just spew shit, but to listen. Listening is what it's all about. Keep on talking, Duel. We will listen. We will think and we will learn. Kuroishi. Thank you, Kuroishi, for that great email. Very well written. I'm glad you liked 63, and I hope everybody else got the message. That message is that you need to be social. And you know, hackers are social. It is inherent. How else are you going to share all this information about technology? Right? You're going to get on a board. You're going to get on a con line. You're going to do a radio show with your friends. That's what hacking is about. So I'm glad he got it, and I'm sure everybody else has as well. You know, I got some other emails. I actually talked to him on a con line from Gluco, and he's been wanting me to do something for quite a while, and I'm going to take the time right now to do it. And I'm kind of, you know, it's still talking about technology, but it's going to veer away from computers and phones a little bit. Basically, what it's going to be is I'm going to give you a quick lesson in physical security. Now, as everybody knows, and please chime in, guys, physical security has got to be your first part of securing your computer. Because physical access equals owning the box. Is that correct?
Definitely.
Definitely. So
there's definitely a deterrent. I think you know you were just a little bit exaggerating in your comment there. Of course, physical access to the box does not necessarily mean you have complete access or owning of the box. But yet your point is very well taken. Every company that I've worked for has had physical security. Just to get in the building, you have to have ID cards just to show the guards when you get in the building. And then once you work for a company, even to get into the computer room, you have to swipe a card that only a certain number of people have access to the operations center or to the mainframe room, et cetera, et cetera. So it's definitely very important. But it is not just getting physical access. It's not 100%, you know, you have gotten root to the system, but I don't think you were trying to say that.
I am saying that. If I have 100% access, physical access to a box, and in unlimited time, I own that box. It doesn't matter how, I mean, unless it's, you know, infinite, if you've got some huge amount of, you know, this hugely strong encryption on your data, then it'd be very difficult. That's just huge delay. I can still crack it with enough
time, absolutely.
Yeah, with enough time and resources, I can still get in it. All you can do is add delay. Physical access takes away much of the delay. Think about an insider. Insiders have authorized access up to some point, correct? They own the box.
Well, they have whatever security defaults have been set up by the security officer. For example, let's say I were to sneak into the dual parallel hack cave and try to log into your computer. Well, if I can't get into the root account, I haven't owned your box yet. With infinite time, I would eventually root the box, but just the simple access of it, by the time you get home and catch me, I'm SOL by then. But yes.
Well, that's the function of delay. And if you've got a boot disk, right, and I don't have a password on my BIOS, which you could reset anyways with physical access, you could still get in my computer. Really, honestly, if you have physical access, it's pretty much yours. Okay? And let's use this. If I break, I don't want to say that. If somebody, a criminal, breaks into some building, somebody's house, whatever, and takes the computer away, they've got it. They've got the data on it.
And that is absolutely true.
Okay, it's safe to assume that physical access is quite important. Physical security is an important part of securing your computers and or your network. So, in this physical security lesson, here's what Gluco wanted to talk about. He wanted me to talk about CCTV and camera, you know, basically how cameras fit into physical security. Now, there are three components to an effective physical security system: detection, delay, and response. Right? You've got your bad guy coming into the facility. If you don't know he's coming in, if you don't know he's there attacking your facility, then he has as much time as he wants to defeat any of your countermeasures, to defeat any of your delay. So the first thing you need is detection. They're coming in, you detect them, okay, great. Now what do? You have to assess what the problem is. And assessment is done by cameras. Cameras are not sensors. Cameras do not perform detection. Cameras are assessment. So again, you have detection. Let me go back and go through this detection, delay, response stuff just so everybody understands. You got detection, delay, and response. Again, bad guy's coming in, you got to detect him. After you detect him, you have to make sure that you have enough delay built into your physical security system so that you can respond. Again, there's the response. Respond to take care of him, right, before he gets in. So again, you got to detect him. You've got to delay him long enough for the response. And response for most homeowners is going to be what? It's going to be called a 911 and the cops coming in. And you probably don't have that kind of delay. So, sorry, bad news, everybody. Your home alarm system isn't going to do much for you. So, in that detection, delay, response model, cameras are going to be the assessment of detection. And what he wanted to know about, we talked about, I have a little system set up here in my house, you know, my own little ghetto system, and he wanted me to talk about that, so I will. So there's your quick physical security lesson. If that wasn't very clear, send me an email, I'll try to clear that up for you. What I have in my house, I had, you know, again, you know me, doing the ghetto stuff, going to the surplus, grabbing the cheap stuff. Here's what I did. I was actually at a Kmart, believe it or not, and I saw this little, you know, home secure, quote, security camera. It's this little black and white camera with an RCA jack, basically, RCA cable you stick into a VCR or a TV. And I guess it has sound as well, so it has sound and then black and white video. $40, so I grabbed that. 80 foot of cable. Went to the electronic surplus, and they've got tons of CCTV monitors. Of course, it's got the RG, what is it, you know, the coax connector in the back. Well, you need an adapter to put the RCA into that. And I used this cheap camera I got from Kmart with a nice, you know, used Sony CCTV black and white monitor. And then I can set this up anywhere in my house. I could pipe it through my VCR if I want, and get it through the monitor and then record it. I could go straight to a TV if I want to do that. It works really well. And it was dirt cheap. Actually, I think I paid $30 for the monitors. So $70 total. I have a simple CCTV system in my house. So if you want a system for yourself, search around. Look for a used little monitor, maybe a small black and white TV if that's all you need. And then search for a cheap camera. Radio Shack has some cameras. I think they're a little pricey. If you want better cameras, probably mail order or online. And, of course, you can get the little pinhole cameras and hide them wherever you want. But you got to think about, you know, if you're putting it outside, if it's inside, what kind of lighting there's going to be. You know, is it going to be on the, you know, sunny side of the house? You want assessment at night? You got to think about all those things. And that is how simple a CCTV system can be. One cheap camera, a cheap monitor, and you've got assessment. Of course, you need some detection. You need to know if somebody's there, and you need to look at them, and that can come in many forms, whether it be a passive infrared sensor. Well, there's many other ways to do it, but probably out of most people's price range. So there you go, a quick physical security lesson, a little tip on CCTV, implement it at your house. Have fun. Do some hacking, man. Figure out new ways to use physical security effectively. Very nice. You guys like that?
Very interesting.
Thank you very much. I could go on and on, but I won't, because it's... Oh, no!
Oh, man.
Oh, I forgot! Son of a bit. Hold on, let me see if I have a toner. I don't even have a tone dialer handy.
Wait.
Crap. What?
Hold on.
Oh, bust it.
Dude, I'm such an ass in my cell phone.
What?
That's actually, my cell phone will allow you to save voice notes.
Right.
Yeah, so I've got Redbox tones on my voice notes in my cell phone.
Awesome. Throw them out, dude.
Absolutely useless, but hold on, let me get there.
All right. Okay, I can't believe it. I forgot the tones.
Here we go.
All right.
Damn it. Hold on.
It's not working? I'm looking for any other kind of tone.
Here?
No, I can't.
No, it's not loud enough.
No, it's not. I've got this.
Let me give it a... Let me see if this comes through.
That works. Do it again.
Is that good?
Yeah, the first one was much better.
Yeah.
Let me see if this works. I've got a... Oh, I can't hear that either? Shit! Oh, well, screw it. It's still the freak news.
You're a Annoyobug?
What's that?
That's your Annoyophone?
Yeah, the Annoyophone. Did you guys ever hear that?
I heard it on the phone losers.
The con line?
Con line.
Yeah. Does it work well?
Yeah, it hurt pretty bad.
Oh, good, thanks. Okay, another... Guess what? We actually have a tip, a freak tip from Kiroshi. Duel, I just read the XL Box article. I came up with a great idea a while back. My DSL provider sent me a shitload of DSL line filters. As my DSL is on a different line from my main phone, I do not need these filters. They make excellent modular components for boxes. The ones my ISP gave me can easily be cracked open and modded to perform many different functions. Easiest thing to do is to cut off the RJ11 plug and replace it with Gator clips and just plug your phone into it when you want a beige box. This way, you don't need to destroy a perfectly good cord. Thank you very much for that tip, Frishi. Very good. That's right. Read that XL box article. Actually, probably the most important part, you know, the most important point to that article would be modularity and making all of your components, you know, your freak components modular. Check out that article at oldschoolfreak.com. Last week, I mentioned Quest Long Distance, right? It just came to my area this month, May. Well, I want to go a little deeper into it if anybody didn't go to the site and read that stuff. Basically, let's go back. Let's all go back. Not all the way back. Thank you very much. Thank you. That was not rehearsed, by the way. Not as far back as divestiture, but let's go to the Telecom Act in 96. What this act was for was to promote competition in the telecom industry. And, of course, this was to give CLEX access to the ILEC lines and vice versa, well, and also to let ILEX have toll service in their areas, and they have to do a few things to get that. And what they have to do is first file with the FCC and meet a 14-point competitive checklist. Actually, I want to read this checklist, not too long. It's 14 points long. Interconnection, this is for Quest now, interconnection of Quest and wireline and wireless carriers networks, non-discriminatory access to network elements, non-discriminatory access to poles, ducts, conduits, and rights of way, unbundled local loops, local transport, and local switching. Now that's unbundled means you get, let's say, unbundled local loops, you get access to the local copper, right, the local loop, without any services, right? So it's just the loop, no service included with it. Non-discriminatory access to 911 directory assistance and operator services, white pages directory listings, non-discriminatory access to telephone numbers, non-discriminatory access to databases and signaling, like SS7, number portability, we talked about that in the past, LNP, local dialing parity, what that means is that a CLEX calls get routed at the same priority as an ILEX calls, right? So it's not like, hey, you know, you're a punky little McLeod CLEX, your calls are much slower to connect than ours. No, that's what local dialing parity means. Reciprocal compensation and resale of telecommunication services. Now, in addition to this 14-point checklist, there's other things. You have to have, this is, again, for Quest Long Distance, copies of all interconnection agreements entered into under the Act, status of any federal court challenges, a complete record of any state PUC proceedings examining compliance with Section 271, that's the compliance they need to meet, and then documentation showing how a long-distance rule will serve the public interest. Well, of course it serves the public interest, and especially when, and hopefully you've heard this at the beginning of the show, Quest offers nationwide long distance for $30 a month. That is unbelievable. I don't know if I mentioned that on the last show, but I'm paying quite a bit right now for AT&T. It's still a good deal, but Quest now is offering $30 a month, unlimited, 24/7 long distance in the 48, no, actually all 50, I believe, and even, you know, some Virgin Islands, stuff like that, for $30 a month. So hopefully you heard that at the beginning of the show. Hopefully I signed up and it was successful. And it's an unbelievable deal. I tell you what, I will let everybody know how it works. I'm definitely going to do this. I can't pass up saving that much money, and you know, and let's hope. Quest actually, they've got long distance service in. Let's see, Quest is in 14 states as the Arbok, and they have long distance service outside that area in 34 states. So that's what, that's 48. So I'm assuming the contiguous 48 they have service. And I think they only need, I think they've got 12 of their 14 right now, and they're just waiting on Arizona and another state, maybe Minnesota, I'm not sure, don't quote me on that. So they're going to be a big, big long distance provider. Again, I'll let everybody know how it goes. I don't foresee any problems. I think Quest will probably be a pretty good provider.
You know, Drew, I got a question. Whose job is it, and how can we be sure that those 14 points are being served?
The FCC, they actually go into that right here. The FCC must consult with state regulators to determine if Quest has met a 14-point competitive checklist required for approval. Now, and after they apply with the FCC, there's 90 days. There's 90 days to a decision, so it's pretty quick. You meet those 14 points, you put it in the FCC, they've got to find out fast. That's a lot of work for them. So that's who does it, state regulators and the FCC.
Do they come after the 90 days every so often to make sure that they're still being upheld?
That's a good question. I read about some independent testing that Quest is doing to make sure that they're meeting these points and to make sure that all the CLECs have what they need, you know, so they can provide. Of course, Quest has no problem providing long-distance service. It's giving the CLECs access to all their stuff, right, number portability, switches, loops, stuff like that. I don't know, though. I don't know what the process is afterwards. I'd really like to hear about that, and maybe I'll start researching next. I don't know who would be, you know, collecting that data, if it would be the PUC or these state regulators. I am going to look into that because I want to see how it works first of all, and then I want to see how they keep that up. I'm sure that if there are problems, we'll hear about them. We'll hear about them on the news, right? We'll hear about them on /.something. You know, CLECs are raising hell because they don't have access to the Arbok switches. You know, I think we would hear if there was trouble. I really do, and that would probably make for really good news too. Okay, next on the Freak News. Ooh, this one is juicy. It is so juicy, and I'm not going to talk a lot about the war, or the past war that we, quote, won, whatever. MCI to begin rebuilding of Iraqi phones. I actually, during this war, patient, excuse me, I heard about American bombs basically destroying, what I can only say is a switch, basically. Destroying their, you know, telecommunications infrastructure. I guess bombs landed on a switch and destroyed their telecommunications. So that kind of upset me, you know, as dear as phones are to me. But here again, MCI to begin rebuilding of Iraqi phones. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs here. American telephone giant MCI has been awarded a contract to build a small mobile phone network in Baghdad as the United States takes an initial step to rebuild basic communications in a city ravaged by two wars and 11 years of severe economic sanctions. A working phone system is largely absent in much of the Iraqi capital, apart from limited grids of wired networks. Many Westerners, including military personnel, aid workers, and journalists, have had to rely on satellite phones, which typically do not work indoors. Even before the most recent U.S. bombing, Iraq's telecommunications resources were scarce and unreliable. Analysts estimate, check this out, that the pre-war telephone network was capable of serving only 3 out of every 1,000 people. Unbelievable. I don't know the statistics here in the States, but not getting a dial tone is rare, very rare. I mean, I would assume like 99%, maybe not quite that much, but I bet it's really, really high. You will get a dial tone every time you go off hook. This is an interesting point here. There's a representative, Daryl Issa, I believe, ISSA, Republican from California, attacked the Defense Department's plans even before they were disclosed. Why? Well, because he wants CDMA, he wants Qualcomm, basically, who is in his Southern California district, to get the contract. Why? Because Qualcomm would use their CDMA, Code Division Multiple Access Standard, right? Hey, they should get it, not anybody else. We should use American technology. Well, of course, he wants the, you know, they're paying him off. anyways, it's a bunch of crap, right? The big company in his district, just like what's that? Is it Boucher? Who's the guy who was pimping all these crappy laws, the CDPTA, you know, for the RAA and everybody, MPAA? That's it. Same kind of crap right here. They want to go GSM because, you know, most of Europe, everybody around Iraq, they use GSM, Global System for Mobile Communications. Yeah, but this guy is bitching and moaning because the huge company, probably giving him lots of money, Qualcomm, is not getting the contract. What a bunch of shit. That's a little side note there. That's the freak news. Give me some tones.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, dude.
Dion, here you go.
You should be. Here we go. Do it again.
Have to rewind.
You have to rewind.
There you go.
Is that, that's good enough. He's analog, folks. Analogs. And with the end of the freak news, now comes the hacker news. Hey, guys, can I talk about something quickly?
Of course.
On the hacker news? Okay, well, Mozilla's permissions piss me off. I decided, you know, I actually use Mozilla. I actually like it on my Linux box. It's my main browser. Oh, where'd it go? There it is. I was using 1.1. I said, yeah, I better go up to 1.3. 1.3.1, I think, is the latest, other than the 1.4 beta. You know, get the latest. I didn't even have Flash. I don't care. So I didn't even install it. I didn't want Flash. I don't think I have Java. Well, maybe I had Java installed. I don't remember. No, I don't think I did. And I said, yeah, I'll just go ahead and get all that crap and see what I'm missing. Not much. Did all that. Everything works fine. Everything's great. Really happy. I do like Mozilla. A little fat, but I don't care. And then I wanted mouse gestures. I really like mouse gestures. I tried them first in Opera, then of course again in Mozilla. So I installed them. It's called Optimoz, right? Optimoz.mozdev.org. And I installed them, no problem, works fine as root. You know, you gotta do it as root. And then I go back and try to do it as regular user. Well, it doesn't launch. What the hell's going on? What the frick is going on? I couldn't launch Mozilla as a regular user. Pissed me off. Man, I was mad. You know, I'd launch it, get a lot of processes running, and wouldn't run. I'd run it again and ask for, you know, a new profile because one's already running. I said, it's not running, you... Oh, man, I was so mad. I was so mad. So I did a little digging, not too much, and I found out what was wrong. You have to change permissions for all this stuff. And I'm going to tell you guys, I'm going to tell everybody listening, so you won't get pissed off like me. All you have to do, once you install and do this as root, launch Mozilla as root, then install Optimoz, right? Install the mouse gestures again as root, and then go into your shell, and again as root, cd to user local Mozilla Chrome mozgest, which is Mozilla gestures again, /user local Mozilla Chrome mozgest, and then chmod -R recursive 755 asterisk. That's everything. So you're going to chmod everything, and then everything will work fine for your regular user. Yes, it's not much of a hack. It's more of me getting pissed off and figuring out how to make it work. But still, I'm hoping to save anybody else that frustration. Thank you.
Well, listen, anybody figuring out how to get something to work is hacking. That is hacking. That's the definition of hacking.
Thank you.
You know, probably the biggest thing this week in hacking news is our old friend Microsoft is at it again.
What'd they do?
Everybody's favorite. There was an internal memo that somehow was leaked out that says, quote, under no circumstances, capital N-O, under no circumstances, lose against Linux.
Really?
This was from a high-level manager who was in charge, apparently, of overseas division, for lack of a better word. I don't know his exact title, but basically in charge of South American countries and some other overseas markets. And basically they're saying, according to the report, that their strategy is to offer deep discounts or more, even as far as giving away the product for free, if and only if and when they're going to lose a contract to someone who's going to a Linux solution. So Linux being a free solution for the most part, paying for support when necessary, which is what most businesses do. If it does come down to a cutthroat position where a company makes a decision that we are going with Linux, Microsoft is making it very clear that if we have to, we'll give them the Windows. You know, kind of like a drug dealer will give them that first hit.
Right.
You know, and then hook you in, and then when time comes, you're stuck in that web, and it's going to make it that much more difficult to go out and try to get some other alternative.
Bastards.
So yeah, that was a little nasty. It says, let me just quote this line. It says, "It's important that we have a way to address large PC purchases that involve low-cost, no-cost competitors, specifically Linux, of course, in the education and government sectors," which is the primary places that they're looking, like I said, in emerging markets, which is what their catch line is for outside of the United States, basically. Emerging markets, meaning emerging companies like, well, say probably Iraq, I would imagine, would be an emerging company soon, places like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they're calling it the Education and Government Incentive Program. So they're, you know, it's not only are they doing it, but they're trying to hide it as though this were some kind of program, sneakily pretending they've got a little fund that they pull from, a slush fund that they have, where basically if they have to undercut a Linux solution somehow and they have to justify giving their product away for free, they just kind of pull money out of that fund so that it doesn't look like it's a loss. They put a set aside, sneak aside a little bit of money so they can kind of work the books a little bit to make sure that they cover the potential loss or the accounting loss, so to speak.
Right.
Well, it's kind of sleazy the way they're going
about it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's got a catchy name, though.
Yeah, well, you know, Microsoft's good with the catchy names, I guess.
Yes. We are, speaking of Linux and the evils of free operating systems, we are going to have an awesome, at the end of the Hacker News, or right after, we're going to have a review of SUSE 8.2, one of my favorite distros, by Bland Inquisitor, on this show. So, continue with the Hacker News.
Well, let's see. Here's another. As long as we're talking about giant corporations and big conglomerates, I'm going to go with one of your favorites, Walt Disney.
The devil.
Of Walt Disney. Walt Disney Company has decided to go back to a marketing strategy for DVDs. Before DivX was a compression algorithm, before DivX was a player to play AVIs and things like that, DivX was a failed attempt at making DVDs that you could use on basically a pay-per-view basis. Have you guys ever heard or used anything of those?
Yeah, I remember that. It was a video on demand.
Exactly. It was like a pay-per-view, except you physically... Circuit City had pushed it real hard when it first came out, and before DVDs had really caught on. It was basically an alternative to DVDs.
Yeah, you buy the thing for, like, wicked cheap, and you can only watch it three times, and then it self-destructs or whatever.
Yeah, well, I think actually you would buy it cheap for maybe a buck or two, and then when you each viewing you would have to activate it. Now, honestly, I don't remember how, if it was a phone thing, if it was how it actually activated the DVD, but then you would pay for each use. So you'd buy the DVD for a buck or two, and then you'd pay another buck or two for each time you viewed it, which is, of course, the MPAA loved that. They pushed that big time, and it never got off the ground. There was the early stages of consumers becoming tech-savvy and realizing what an absolute ridiculous rip-off and idea that was. Well, apparently Disney's decided they're going to give it another shot. They have come up with a new type of DVD that will self-destruct in 48 hours.
48 hours?
2 days. You have this DVD that you purchase, and basically they're treating it, they're acting like they're expanding the rental market by doing this. That's the way they're trying to market it. But, of course, consumers who are in the know and listen to this show and understand technology are going to see it as just the same old thing that failed several years ago. Basically, you can go to... if you wanted to rent a DVD now, for example, you have to go to the big Blockbuster. You know, another monstrous monopoly that I'm not going to go off on a rant about. But you have to go to a rental store to get the DVDs and rent them nowadays, or you buy them. So, or there's, what is the one online? Netflix?
Yeah.
Netflix is a good online alternative. Well, what they're saying is that they want to be able to rent DVDs from any retailer. And that's their strategy. That's how they're marketing this. They're going to say, put these in Walmarts and Targets, et cetera, that you can buy off the shelf. And you pay a couple dollars for this DVD. You take it home, and you get to watch it for 2 days before it is, well, basically destroyed. So it's similar to the DivX, except that instead of, with the original DivX idea, you could keep that original disc you paid a couple bucks for, and 6 months down the road, if you wanted to watch it again, technically you could still activate it. I don't even know if DivX lasted 6 months, to be honest with you. People probably got stuck with some of those, but this one, you've got 2 days to use it. The very interesting part of this is how it works. The DVD, I don't know how they're going to ship this. I'm not a chemist, but I don't know how they're going to ship and package this, but basically what happens is the disc ships with chemicals on the bottom of it that have a 48-hour shelf life or 48-hour half-life when it comes in contact with oxygen. So you start off buying this DVD, and it's red on the bottom. But as soon as you take it out of the package, the moment you take it out and expose it to oxygen, the disc starts a slow chemical breakdown that turns it to a black bottom disc, at which point it is no longer usable. So what they're thinking is that you go buy this, say, I don't know what they're charging, I didn't see any pricing for this, unfortunately, but let's say it was $5, you buy this DVD off the shelf, you take it home, and you wash it, and you consider it rental for $5, and you don't have to drive to and from the store to pick it up and drop it off. That's their marketing for it. So I found it kind of interesting that they're actually doing this on a chemical level. I would love to read and hear about the chemicals that are involved in this, but I'm sure they probably got some kind of patent on that whole process.
Yeah, I love that idea. Filling our landfills with millions of these plastic discs. It's just genius. So they can get their goddamn money. What a bunch of crap.
They'll pile them up with all the AOL discs that are already
there. No kidding.
Yeah, it kind of made me think about it. Just the fact that this has been done before. And if anything, even though DivX sucked, this sucks worse. This one, after 48 hours, it's trash. It's no good.
Right.
At least with the DivX, as crummy as it was to pay-per-view, which is the MPAA's wet dream, pay-per-view, they, at least 6 months from then, you could go back and reuse them if you wanted to. You don't have that option with these now.
Right.
But yeah, it just can't. I wonder sometimes. You know, we got all these crummy TV shows that come out about who wants to blow a millionaire and they had a TV show about who's the most beautiful dog in the world. They had a dog.
You're lying.
No, that was on like a week or two ago. If it's dumb, Fox will air it. If it's a dumb reality show, Fox will put it on TV. They have no problems with it. They had a top 50. They had dogs come out with Miss Idaho across their sash across their body. It's a ridiculous
You're
show.
Lying,
and
dude.
I'm wondering. I'm waiting for Fox to put out a reality show called Corporate Jackass, a spin-off of the Jackass show where every one of these dumb asses from the corporate universe could be on there and be made a fool of on television, because there are a lot of morons in the suit and tie world.
Oh, how about this? How about corporate whores and have all our legislators?
Ooh, and we'll put them in masks and we'll have Lewinsky host it.
What? Who's going to host it?
Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, yeah.
Hosting that new show. That's another dumb... anyway,
she's a natural fit.
I want to turn that into a whole TV rant, but
yeah.
I went off. But you know, here's the interesting thing. I'm not a chemist. I don't purport to be a chemist. I don't even know a chemist, to be honest with you. But I can't help but wonder that somebody is going to analyze this. There are some chemists out there that cross over into the hacker world or think outside of the lines, or maybe just plain find this interesting. I'm wondering if they're going to start some chemical hacking. I wonder if they're going to start researching this and digging it up and find some way to, you know, that would be the biggest backfire for Disney Corporation if somebody were to found out. Like, it says in this article that it turns from red to black. Now, the first thing that pops into my head, well, Sony PlayStation plays black bottom DVDs. I wonder, you know, they may think that this is not going to play in a DVD player, but I wonder if this would play in a PlayStation.
You know, I wonder
if they tested it on those kind of things, you know?
I think I've heard about this in the past. I think maybe this is that, like you said, Disney's second, crack at this. And I heard that it was like a sandwich, and the middle layer basically degraded, coming in contact with oxygen. Yeah, if this, if, if, if what you say is going to come out, you know, where it's just the bottom layer that's degrading, then, you know, yeah, maybe some chemists will find a hack, you know, and they'll sell little spritzer bottles right at the stuff, and they spray it on your disc, and, you know, it'll last for, you know, 2 years or forever instead of the 48 hours.
It reminds me of those uncopyable CDs that hold that all that millions of dollars that they spent trying to make CDs that couldn't be copied because you had the outer ring on it, and somebody figured out that a 79-cent Sharpie.
Yeah, I've got one right here, by the way.
Yeah, roll right around the edge of it, and you'll somebody's going to figure out, and I will, oh my God, I will laugh on the show, and I will say, I told you so, I'll laugh my ass off. Somebody's going to figure out that all you have to do is stick this in a fucking freezer or something.
Right.
Renews the whole damn thing over again, you know?
That is hilarious. That
I
is so funny.
I can't wait to see.
You know, and check this out. Now, I don't know, maybe, tell me if you guys have the same situation occasionally. I'll rent a DVD, you know, at Blockbuster, wherever. And you have it for, what, 2 days? I don't know how long you get it for. And I'll be so damn busy that I can't watch it. You know? 48 hours, I would have to plan. I would have to plan to watch a movie within a 48-hour time frame. Seriously. It would be totally, utterly worthless for me. I can't tell you how many I've rented and I just haven't had a chance to watch, to sit down for that 2 hours. So I think, guess what, Walt Devil? I think it's a horrible, horrible idea, and you're idiots!
You know, the thing is, those first-generation copy protection, or any of that, is always just, like, ultra, ultra shitty. Like, the CD that you could, you know, get around by just drawing on it with a Sharpie pen.
Yeah.
You know, like, the answer to this will probably be something stupid. You know, it'll probably be like you spray it with hairspray and the oxygen can't get to it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean?
You piss on it and it'll...
Yeah, I mean, it's like the solution.
Sorry.
Spend all this time and, you know, Disney and the RIAA and everybody, they're just like, you know, have a massive, you know, brain trust going into how to make this all work. You know, and lo and behold, 45 minutes after the first guy buys one, you know, he sneezes on it, and yeah, woohoo, it works.
That's right. All that think tank out the window, man. We got this massive think tank.
Yeah, and
they will never defeat us.
And that's what's so great. It's like these people like really stress and, you know, break up their marriages because you're just trying to think, you know, how to make this happen.
So they can squeeze every dollar out of the consumer.
Yeah, and like some 13-year-old's like, oh yeah. Yeah, I didn't flush the toilet, and here the thing works.
Exactly. Oh, I hope. Oh, I wish. Oh, how I wish.
I don't know if I want to put it back in my DVD player after it's been urinated on.
Yeah, I guess you're right, you know.
Well taken.
you know, blacksmiths used to use urine, you know, to get certain properties out of metals. Okay.
All right, then. There's your trivial knowledge.
That's right. Aha, no knowledge is trivial.
There you go. That's the opening line at your next party. Try that line.
Pick up the chicks that way, huh? you know, blacksmiths would use urine, baby. Yeah, get smacked in the face. I'm used to it, though.
Oh,
I'm so used to it. When do we get to hear the review of 8-2? Is it time?
Sounds good to me.
All right, Bland, you're on.
Okay, in the beige corner, I have got Sousa 8-2. Okay, and in the cheese corner, I have Windows XP.
Ooh.
On a cheese.
Yeah, on a 600 megahertz box. Okay, you got the left hand on the Sousa box and the right hand on the XP.
No way, this is real time.
Yeah, this is real time.
Nice.
Have a race?
Yeah, we're going to have a race.
All right, let's do it.
And I'm going to get to, I figured it would be fair, the administrator logon screen in XP. And the user selection menu for K.
Right, KDM, okay.
All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Okay.
Go, Sousa, go. XP boots pretty fast. XP is notorious for fast booting.
Okay, we're already keyboard, mouse, legacy.
Woohoo.
Okay. And it's XP, coming around the bend. And Sousa, boot the system. Press 2 for reverse mode. Press delete for setup. I felt like, you know, it's like the Kentucky Derby.
Yes, that's very good.
Okay, that was shitty. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. That was funny. Come on, Sousa. My money's on Sousa.
Can I cheer for XP just to piss Duel off? Come on, yeah. XP.
Shut up down there. This is a long time in radio time, though.
Uh-oh, okay. Okay, we're there with XP.
Oh!
And, you know, we're not far away with SUSE.
Tell us when.
Okay, we just loaded up the my wireless cards. And should be pretty quick. The bar is almost there. All right, right there. There we go, login screen.
Okay, that's not too bad.
Okay, so...
That was, what, 30 seconds difference?
I would say 5 seconds.
You think it's that fast?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and log in just because I like the look of it.
Now, 8-2... Oh, I'll let you talk about it.
Okay. Okay, first of all, let's see, I gave Red Hat 9 $0.75, and I'm going to give SUSE 8-2 $1.24.
Ooh, very nice.
And the only distro that gets $1.25 is Novik.
Yeah, $1.25 being perfect.
Yeah.
Yes.
This, man, this is a great, great distribution.
You gotta speak up a little bit.
They are really pretty, multimedia all over the place. It came with all the music applications that I really wanted to use with Red Hat 9 and couldn't get them to work. SUSE 8.2 just came with them. And it runs Wine at startup. So if you want to, if you want to try all your Windows programs or something like that, I mean, it just does it. You don't have to go in and configure it. You don't have to set it up. It just asks you, do you want to emulate 95 or 98? And it goes on. Now, you know. Honestly,
the Wine is not an emulator.
Well.
What is it?
That's the title of Wine. It's,
oh.
The Wine is not an emulator. Ironically,
oh.
It's an emulator.
Yeah,
if you debate that with a true Linux person, oh, they'll hate you for it.
Yeah, I never knew what it stood for. Okay.
All right. Now, to be honest with me, I guess Wine is not an emulator because I have not got it to work yet.
Yeah, I think I've used it like once.
So Wine only works with WinZip or something. Yeah, it's like the little stuff.
Right.
Now, it didn't come... Now, you know, I expected a little bit much out of it being a multimedia distro. Now, they didn't have a low latency kernel. Like, if I wanted one of those, and I do, I'll have to go in and recompile that for myself. Let's see. It came with... it's a German distro, so it came with MP3 support right out of the box.
Nice.
You know, Red Hat 8 and Red Hat 9 did not. It also came with Real Player 8. I love KDE 3.2. Let's see. It didn't have a lot of the games that Red Hat had, but it had Golf, and that's all I need. Golf and Tux Racer.
Tux Racer. I love Tux Racer.
Awesome.
I like Frozen Bubble.
I haven't tried that one.
That one's cool.
Let's see. The sound card recognition came up, worked great. It had full duplex support for my sound card, but the problem is when I loaded up XMMS, it did not like full duplex, so I had to use Kaboodle. And then whenever I decided to just go ahead and turn off full duplex because it didn't need it, then Kaboodle wouldn't work, and I had to use XMMS. So that's kind of weird.
It is. Now, does it come with Audacity?
Yes, yes, it does.
And the 8.2 uses 3.2, KDE 3.2?
Yes.
And that has Ceramic as the default theme with all the transparencies and all the...
No, actually, it's got a really really weak-looking initial interface. It looks exactly like Red Hat, except
really?
For on the launcher, instead of it being a Red Hat, it's a green fish.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I had to go in, and I went in and made it look pretty.
Cool.
Let's see.
Did you get the personal or professional?
I got personal.
Okay.
Let's see. We're going down my notes here, sorry.
That's all right.
Still had a video problem. With Red Hat, you know, it didn't like my NVIDIA GeForce 2 Go, and I had to use the VESA driver to get my video to work with Red Hat 8 and Red Hat 9. And same thing for SUSE 8.2. It just did not like my NVIDIA card. I'll fix it later. You know, NVIDIA has an actual driver that you can go and do, and I hear it's pretty easy, so I'll do it. I just haven't had time. So it shouldn't be that bad. My digital camera was given to me by my father-in-law because he got Windows XP, and XP would not recognize this particular digital camera. So I was like, well, you know, hey, why not? So I plugged it into the serial port of my laptop, opened up, let's see, I've still got it in my launcher. Program is called fuck it, I can't find it. Anyway, this program, I think it's called Camera with a K or something like that.
Yeah.
And, that's about right.
And worked like a champ.
Awesome.
Pulled the pictures off. Pulled it off faster than it pulled them off when I had 98 on my main computer. So, yeah, my camera works great. Everything is just really, really happy.
Very nice.
I love this distro.
And that's one of the features you say where they're emphasizing the whole digital media system.
Yes. Yeah, they're actually in the launcher. Now, I do like the launcher a lot better, how they have everything organized. I like their organization better with SUSE than I did with Red Hat. The problem with Red Hat was that I didn't really know. Like, I knew what I wanted to do, right? But I didn't know what it was going to be called. But you know, whatever program I wanted to run probably either had a K or a GNU at the beginning.
Right.
So it's like, and their all their file names are really, really ambiguous. So I was having a lot of trouble with that in Red Hat. Cause I was like, well, you know, I'll try this, and it turns out it's like an address book or something. But with SUSE, you know, your launchers are called Games, Graphics, Internet, Multimedia, Office, System. I mean, it's like, you know, and if you go to multimedia, it's subdirectories into CD, sound, and video. So, it, you know, if you're looking for a sound playing application, go to multimedia sound, and there's, what, 5, 10, 20, 25 things in there. So if one doesn't work, just go down to the next one.
Yeah, it sounds like it makes sense.
It's a really, really good deal.
Now, if you could, answer me a couple of questions.
Okay.
One, would you recommend this for somebody new to Linux?
I would recommend it above Red Hat.
Really? Now, have you used, I'm assuming, I know you have, but again, for the people new to Linux, did you use Yast?
Yes, I did. Yet another setup tool, or whatever it was.
Right.
Now, I like that a lot better than Anaconda, which is Red Hat's setup tool. It made a lot more sense to me. It would show you everything in almost like a drop-down style. It would say games, and you would click on games. It would show you all the ones it had available, and you can pick them, or you could X them out. Instead, with Red Hat, you kind of take the long way around with Anaconda.
And how about the browser? What browser are you using? What browser did it install by default?
Well, I'm using KDE, so I use Conqueror.
And do you like it?
I like it a lot.
Does it render well? Is it fast?
Very fast. It's also the well, it integrates naturally, I guess, like Internet Explorer does for Windows. It's also your file browser. You know, I've made a file for myself that I put all my episodes of RFA and everything else into. You know, I can listen to on the road.
Nice.
And so Conqueror, you know, it loads up as that as well.
Yeah, I've actually used Conqueror, and I loved it. I love how it makes thumbnails really nice for you. It's a smooth, smooth browser.
It even thumbnails like PDF files and everything.
Oh, cool.
It's so, so nice.
Very nice. So it got how much? $1.24?
Yeah, $1.24.
Dude, that's phenomenal.
The only reason it didn't get that extra penny to tie with Nopix was it did put me out 42 something, like 35.
Right, $39.99 plus tax. Yeah, $40 is still a good deal. It's still a very good deal.
Considering that, you know, they want, you know, just an ungodly amount of money for Windows XP. Now, I have XP Professional, full version. It's like $300.
Ouch.
And so I've bought Red Hat 8, Red Hat 9, SUSE 8.2, and it's $120. I could still buy like 5-6 more distros and still be under my operating system budget. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and your camera works.
Yeah, and my camera works, and, you know, for however many computers I have, I spent $40 once for SUSE, or, you know, 15 cents once for Nopix, and there's your complete operating system solution.
Unbelievable. Yeah, is really, XP Pro is really $300?
Right here. No, it came bundled with the laptop I bought.
Sure. But retail, that's how much you would pay. I had no idea.
It's unbelievable.
I had no idea it was that much money. That is just, it is. You could, and just think what you get with the SUSE A2 Professional, which I think is like $69.99, I think it's like $70, if I'm correct. Just think what you get with that. if you get that much more, more packages, maybe you get Star Office instead of Open Office. You know, who knows what else you get with the professional package? And I'm sure you get more support.
Oh yeah, see, I read the packaging. There was an advertisement for an A2 Professional, and it's like 10 CDs and 2 DVDs.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like just an incredible amount of stuff. And even this was 3 CDs. You know, XP is 1.
Right. 1 CD of crap.
Isn't it funny that none of us know how much Windows XP actually costs?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't either. I really don't.
You know, I know how much it costs. I paid $69.99 for a Mandrake 9, Power Pack Edition. I don't know if I had the personal or professional, whatever. It's called the Power Pack Edition. It was $70. Man, was it worth it.
With soft to get all the extra digital media and stuff that some of these things you're describing, you know, you have to buy the Digital Media Plus Pack, and you have to buy the normal Plus Pack, and you have to buy the, blah, you know, all these extra separate things.
The Ass Plus Pack.
I'm all on one.
Yep.
And that you can also download and make yourself. So, I mean, if you don't necessarily want to buy the media in the store to have the books and the manuals and the hard CDs, you can make your own.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and let's say you bought that version of SUSE 2, the personal version, $40. I want a bunch of servers to run on this box. Just like you said, you could download them, compile them, and have your own service all for free, right? Or you can go ahead and get the support and the CDs and the DVDs and all the servers already included, probably with some type of wizards in there as well, for $70. See, you've got so many options at such a great price. I don't see the point anymore. And that's why they are scared. That's why Stank was talking about that earlier, Microsoft should never ever lose to the free or low-cost operating system solutions, which is Linux. Did they say Linux specifically?
You know what? That's a good question. I do not know. I think they said other free or low-cost alternatives, including Linux. I don't know if they specifically said. It seems like it said alternatives including Linux.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and check. And that's just the one particular story that I read. If they actually quoted that in the email specifically, the internal email that was released, I would have to see the full text of the email,
right,
of course.
Right. That was a great review, Bland. Thank you very much.
Got one more thing.
Oh, please.
Now, this is, I guess, maybe because it's my fourth distro, and maybe I should be getting a little more used to stuff, but everything just went through, and everything made me really happy, and it didn't, you know, pardon my language, it didn't give me any shit. It was just like, here you go, here's your distro, have a nice day.
Yeah, isn't that great? Isn't that so nice?
And, like, even micro, you know, even when you install Windows, and I've installed and reinstalled and reinstalled a billion times, you know, you get the feeling like it's just kind of sitting there patronizing you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the ultimate in security, come to IIS, you know? And it's just, I don't know, just with this, I loaded it up. It was like, hey, thanks for your support. You know, you could have went out and downloaded this stuff for free, and we don't really mind, but you know what? Thanks for paying for it. Here's your sticker.
That's right. Oh, I love those stickers. And let me wager a guess here. I'll wager that you had fun, that it was fun.
Install it?
Yeah, everything, to use it.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I've got I think Hack and Slash's McFreak wallpaper up.
Yeah. Yes, I knew it. And they even say that. SUSE says that. They got that little green lizard, right, the chameleon.
Yeah.
And it even says, have fun. And it is. It is so much fun.
Great. I'm having a blast with it. Everyone should go and download it or buy it. Use it. It's great.
I don't know if you can. Can you download SUSE? I think you can only download the eval copy. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think they expire after 30 days. But
oh, really?
Yeah, just use it until you get paid next, man, and then go buy it.
Yeah, hell yeah, it's worth it. $40 is so worth it.
Yeah, you can get it. I got mine at Best Buy.
Yeah, believe it or not, those large companies carry that kind of stuff. I wonder how they're doing with that. I wonder if it's if they're selling a lot of copies. They must. If they're selling it, they must be making some money off it. So.
Not going to take shelf space away from something else.
Oh, no. No, I doubt that.
I think it's kind of interesting, too, that, and it's probably, well, it's obviously a good sign, but if I remember correctly, Duel, you had loved a previous version of Sousa, and then you said they just went straight to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, it was...
So it sounds like maybe they bounced back with a good change. They've gone back to the original...
Well, or they fixed what was wrong, and it was 8.0, right? 8.0 was great, phenomenal, love it, stable, everything, can't say enough about it. 8.1 came out really fast afterwards. I think they were trying new stuff, I don't know, but it was crappy. It didn't work at all for me. There were so many problems, it was horrible. It sounds like, again, they've evolved, they've fixed all the problems, and they've just kept going forward and made another great distribution. A2, it sounds like, is phenomenal, and I would like to try it personally. I don't have the $40 right now, but I'm hoping to try it soon. They've had that happen in the past. Actually, 7.2 was great. I loved that one, and then 7.3, they kind of had some problems. And then 8.0 was just phenomenal, and then again, 8.1, crappy. So let's hope. And I'm sure not everybody had the same, the same problems with 8.1 that I did. I had quite a few, and it really pissed me off, so... I got rid of it. I think I threw it away. It pissed me off so bad. So I bought Red Hat 9, and I don't even want to try it now. I mean, from what Bland has told me between those two distros, I don't even want to try. Oh, actually, I did. I've got I just came into a spare eMachines, right? Got a new one. You know, older box, like a 333. I think it's even a Cyrix chipset. And I decided to put Red Hat 9 on it. Well, guess what? Kernel panic, it would not go on. Wouldn't go on. And I'm not going to really fault it that much because, believe it or not, Nopix wouldn't run on it either.
Oh.
I know, unbelievable. But guess what did? Sousa 8.0. That's right. So, Sousa makes good stuff. Everybody check that out. And thank you very much for that awesome, awesome review. We haven't had a Linux review in a long time. We're out of time, guys.
Man, we're just rolling here. The last few shows, man, I've had so much fun.
Yeah.
Dwayne, they've been chock full of nutty goodness. Nougaty Center.
That's, dude.
If I do say so myself, we're on a run of pretty good shows here.
Oh, very good shows. Very good shows. And, yeah, it's going to keep going. It's going to keep happening like that. We've got more content than we do time, that's for sure. But we're going to keep it coming. We're going to keep the special guests. We're going to keep the special topics. We're going to keep the hacker news, the freak news, and we're going to mix in some other stuff, some art. I've got actually a site with some great art I want to talk about. We couldn't talk about it today. We will get to it, so keep listening to Radio Freak America.